The first one we're going to do is located in the Washington, D.C. area. That's Ken Timmerman, and he looks at geopolitical activities for us, helping us to better understand why these things are happening and what are really the details behind the headlines. Ken, it's a joy to have you along, and let me start with this interesting story. There's a story coming out of the Middle East that an apocalyptic Muslim prophecy has surfaced, and in essence, it is what's driving both sides in the Syrian civil war. Now, that civil war going on for over 3 years, over 170 people killed, millions of people as refugees, both in Turkey and Syria, and it's amazing what's happening, but they say what's driving them is an apocalyptic prophecy from the Muslim world, basically dating back 1,400 years ago to Muhammad, and in the Hadith, he talked about it, and it's really a battle between the Shiites and the Sunnis. Now, I'm not sure how much you know about the prophecy. Explain, first of all, what the different sects are, the Shiites and the Sunnis, and indeed, is this going to be the bloodbath that the Muslim prophet called for?
Jimmy, I'm really glad that you bring it up. These prophecies about the end times in both the Shiite world and the Sunni world are really coming to a fore in what's called the Sham, which is the Arabic word for Syria. And both of the two sects, the main sects of Islam, which divided after the death of Muhammad, both of them believe that a major war in the Sham will lead to the return of the hidden imam, the 12th imam who died in the year 941, has been hiding in a well ever since. And the Iranians believe this. They put out a movie aimed at recruiting volunteers in Mahdi's army for them, and the Sunnis believe it as well. This is a pretty strong motivator for young men who are drinking deeply, if you wish, at the well of Islamic eschatology. The Sunnis and the Shias, as I said, they broke apart after the death of Muhammad. It was essentially a leadership struggle, a struggle over who would become the next caliph, who would inherit the empire that Muhammad had created. It's really all in the family. You know, it separated Aisha, who was the child bride of Muhammad on the one side, and her family from Abu Bakr, from the descendants of Ali, who had married Fatima, the daughter of Muhammad. You know, it gets pretty complicated. It's all in the family. It's all cousins fighting each other, if you wish. And yet you have these two enormous empires who deeply hate each other in many ways, and yet understand that they both have inherited the mantle of Islam. So you saw this in the Iran-Iraq War. For 8 years, the two countries fought each other. Well, they were Sunni versus Shia. Much of that battle was. And you're seeing that play out in Syria today as well.
Would that be the motivation, Ken, for some of these Muslim rebels coming from, for example, the European area or the United States or South America, going in and joining with the rebels there, fighting against Bashar Assad and his military might?
Well, indeed. It has motivated a lot of people to come. They have joined this battle thinking that they will usher in the end times when Islam will be triumphant, the Mahdi will return, lead their armies to destroy Jerusalem and the state of Israel. So this is heady stuff.
It is indeed heavy stuff. This is a prophecy program. Now, we are not believing necessarily in this apocalyptic Muslim scenario that has been laid out, but it does have an interesting connection to the true prophecy that's found in God's Word. And of course, Syria is going to be one of those major players, according to Daniel chapter 11, verses 40 and following. In fact, Syria is the first one to make a move against the Jewish state of Israel. One other question before we leave this issue. Bashar Assad is a part of a mystical sect in what it would be the Shiite section of these two divisions. He's of the Alawite persuasion. And could that be a part of this whole mix as everything is coming together as well?
Absolutely. And the Alawites, as part of the Shias, you know, they've basically been incorporated into the Shia world, feel that they have a particular affinity to the 12th Imam. They believe that they own the 12th Imam, if you wish. Ahmadinejad, the former president of Iran, when he assumed power after his first election in 2005, his very first act as president was to send a contract around the table of his council of ministers and have each minister sign it. Well, it was a contract with the hidden imam. And after they had all signed it and pledged their government to hasten his return to earth, One of the ministers said, well, what are we going to do with this contract? Where are we going to take it? And Ahmadinejad said, well, no problem. I know exactly where we're going to take it. You are going to go take it and drop it down the well where the hidden imam has been hiding since 941 A.D.
It's almost laughable, but indeed, they do believe it. In fact, Ahmadinejad believed that if he could bring about a catastrophic event, that would bring forth the Mahdi, the Messiah. Well, those are very interesting thoughts, and man, you have done your research on that, Ken. I was very much impressed. Let's stay in the Middle East for a moment. The United States Army Chief Dempsey, General Dempsey, has been in Israel meeting with his counterpart, the Chief of Staff of the Israeli Defense Force. One of the things that the Army Chief of Staff from the United States said was that Israel does trust the United States, and they believe that Israel will bomb Iran if needed. Now, that's what he is saying there in Israel. I'm not sure the Israelis are buying it. You're out of the Washington, D.C. area. Do you believe that is a possibility that the one commander-in-chief, President Obama, would indeed follow through and bomb Iran?
How should I say? This has been constructed for political purposes. I don't think there's a great deal of truth in this. They were doing damage control. Dempsey went to Israel for damage control because the Israeli defense minister, Moshe Yaalon, had expressed public doubt in the resolve of the United States to take out Iran's nuclear plants militarily if it came down to that. So Dempsey goes here on this trip, and he sits down with Bogi Yaalon and essentially says, okay, well, I've convinced them now. Now they believe that we have this resolve, and of course, we will do what's necessary should that time arrive. I don't think anybody believes it. I don't think anybody in Israel believes it. I don't think many people in the United States believe it. Yaalon was right in his initial assessment, which is that Obama is weak and projects an image of weakness, and he is very worried that this will, in fact, encourage the Iranian regime to further develop its nuclear weapons capabilities.
And meanwhile, in Vienna, the six powers, the five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council plus Germany, are meeting with their Iranian counterparts, but this time they're bringing to the table experts in the area of weapons of mass destruction. They're trying to take the next step in that six-month period before they come to a final agreement. Now, this is probably subterfuge for facing reality is not going to be a part of what's going to happen here if you look at it really seriously, do you think?
Well, I have not yet seen any significant concession on the part of the Iranians here. The Iranians have said, we demand that the United States lift sanctions, and the U.S. has already lifted some of the sanctions. The Iranians said, we demand that we continue to be able to develop our nuclear research programs, that's what they're calling them, and we demand that the West abandon any claims or efforts to shut down our technology to enrich uranium. And so as a result of that, there's no ban at all on Iranian enrichment. They are installing new generation centrifuges in their enrichment plants. They continue to enrich uranium. They claim only up to 5%. That's the only alleged concession that they're making. They're also continuing work on their heavy water reactor in Arak. Now, this is a plant that the design of this plant is very clearly known to anybody who deals with nuclear proliferation. It's a bomb plant. That's all it is. It is a bomb plant, and they are continuing to build it without any restrictions whatsoever. So I am, not very optimistic about these talks. I think that they will succeed in duping everyone, and they will probably come to some kind of agreement. And the United States, serving our role as a useful idiot to the Iranian desire to become the hegemonist power in the Middle East, we will agree to their conditions and lift sanctions, and this will, in fact, enable them to become a nuclear weapons state with all of the blessings of the West.
Ken Timmerman in Washington, D.C. Folks, you've been eavesdropping on a conversation with a man who has been in these parts of the world that we're discussing. He, for a long time, has labored as a journalist, as an author. He brings expertise to the table that's so important for us to hear. Ken, thank you so very much, my good friend. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Jimmy. God bless.